Wrestling Omakase brings you a full-course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. Fast to finger down.
Start to light together. Kill everyone thinking.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for March 5th, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated feed, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box to sponsor this podcast and accept a one-time or a recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other co-host, Case Lowe. And Case, we were just, as we were doing our little bit of like pre-production, just talking about just a lot of just our feelings kind of going into this week's show and Dragon Gate lately. Before we get into it, I feel like we should just kind of dive in. But buddy, how are you doing right now?
I'm curious to know if this will be another week where you hit the fine listeners of Open the Voice Gate with a cold open, or if we'll go back to our regularly scheduled programming. Because I think this week, if last week was a downer that received the rare Voice Gate cold open, I can't imagine what this week deserves.
I mean, it's like its own separate thing in a way. We're going to be talking about the weekend in Osaka, the last two shows that Dragon Gate has in the Ideon Complex in 2026, as well as Tuesday's Glorious Gate Cork and Hall show. It really does kind of feel like the malaise from Fukuoka, and really everything kind of going into Fukuoka, coming out of everything, I guess I would say, is kind of big picture wise, like we were hoping that like towards a cork and that would like stabilize things and a lead up to that. And we saw over the weekend, really, that the best thing that they kind of done over the week was the short program between Jason Lee and Rhoya Tanaka for the Brave Gate. But I kind of come away from this this week of shows going, oh, that cage match that I've kind of been hinting at, it's already here, and I'm like a little less interested in it after it got announced. And in a lot of things, that this promotion feels like the same amount of cold that I think you could look at New Japan right now in their tournament and kind of have a similar sort of conclusion, and the business kind of reflects that. But you have one thing this week that was objectively very good to great, and Rhoya Tanaka and Jason Lee in the mini program, and I'm just kind of left here wondering, like, are we at a place where we should just full court press on Tanaka, get him to 12, and then get the Dream Gate on him at this point? Because that's like my one big takeaway get from these three shows is, boy, maybe we've been hunting for people, but really under the radar, maybe it is Tanaka being the true guy that the company needs.
Wow, you got right into it this week. I had I had friendly banter planned, but you threw a big topic at me off the jump. You're not fucking around this week. I'm swearing in minute three because I'm taken aback by this. Jesus. Get down to brass tacks. Here we go.
The dark cloud has not left Fort Worth, Texas over the last week.
I was gonna do some Osaka Pro talk. I didn't watch the show, but I was gonna. All right. Is Ryoya Tanaka. Here's what I'll say to this is, I think we'll spend the majority of this podcast talking about the things that are going wrong in this promotion. I think historically we can look at things from a heel unit perspective and what to do and where to rank Aja Dokuro. I think, especially given, you know, I'm coming up on, and this is a dark sentence to say out loud, but 11 years of reviewing Dragon Gate, Cork, and Hall shows, I think we have to talk about the Corkin that we just watched as one of the weaker Corkins in that time period. And I have a few that come to mind that I want to mention during that 11-year stretch. I think the first Osaka show that we watched, that 228 show, is one of the weaker outputs they've ever had in that building. Now, I said last week, you know, let's pump the brakes on the doom and gloom. The promotion's never been worse, this and that. I will say, coming out of these shows, my antenna on that conversation is up a little bit more. I was quite nervous at some of the things that I saw, and quite nervous about some of the things that I didn't see, especially on that Corkin show, more importantly, which I can explain when we get there. I think, Dragon Gate is not at its historical low point, and I can go into great detail. We will when we talk about some of these Corkin Hall shows.
It's not 2009 after the Cora scandal, you know?
No, and it's like, not 2018. Yeah. I mean, we'll go through a Corkin card in 2018. That is absolutely dire. But to your point on Tanaka, this is why I like doing the show with you all these years, because you led me to, I told you right before we started recording that I just started thinking about something as I sat down and got set up tonight. And this sort of led me to this point with you not knowing what that topic was going to be. I think, especially post Kakuta Yoshioka, and this idea, you know, that I had been saying all along, that the story with Kakuta is not one that revolves around Shun Skywalker, it's one that revolves around Yuki Yoshioka, and Yoshioka will vanish Kakuta of the Dreamgate belt. He'll become champion. We'll do a reset after that, and we'll all go about our business. And that obviously did not happen. Kakuta beat Yoshioka at Uno Dos Tres and retained the Open the Dreamgate title. And it got me thinking about, I think, one of the primary issues with Aja Dokuro, and there's a few of them, but there's all of this interference. There's all of this cheating. It doesn't come across charming in the way that I've always felt the double ring out committee did with M2K. I think another reason that it really does not come across charming is that I get this in Noah, and I get this in New Japan, and I get this in American wrestling. And so the novelty of a Toriumon heel unit cheating is completely lost in 2026 when it's a Dragon Gate heel unit cheating, when all of Japan has adopted these bad Western practices. One of the things that I am struggling with is, if it's not going to be Yoshioka, who are we rooting for to vanquish Aja Dokuro? Mike, who is the 1A babyface in Dragon Gate right now? And do you think throughout the 27-year history of the promotion that right now we're living in the hardest time to answer that question of who the 1A babyface is?
Yes, because I think that the clear analog given, like, if we're going to look at it in a historical context, and I think that's kind of what we should do with this, is you're 1A, and the focus of the promotion has been Shun Skywalker essentially for the last 24 months, I would say. Not 24, my Texas educational system there, like the last 18 months, really. And if you want to go and look at it as a thing, like, since the turn, in the lead up to the turn in August, he has been playing the tweener role, that we have seen this company have tweener number one guys, like number 1A guys, like Shima becoming one of those out of 99 into 2000, that can happen. But it's just not, there seems to be just like a certain rigidity with Shun that is not allowing him to do the thing that I think we all were really kind of expecting coming out of the Z-Brats run, which is a full-fledged, like, okay, we're going to have to settle how Shun has been over the last few years. And we know that, like, Dragon Gate would, like, spend the Monte problem and the Daya problem. And then from there, he's a full-fledged babyface. And we're just not at that point. And it does not feel like it's kind of happening in any stretch of the imagination. It's just, in a way, Psypatra is a slightly more face unit in that they are faces against Psypatra, whereas they're still working tweeners against everyone else. And that's a huge kind of problem that I think in concert of a heel unit that is, I think you're right, like it's really something where you look up and down, and I guess All Japan, like Havoc isn't this kind of heel unit in All Japan. Oh, but like we're at a point that it's so blatant, and in ways that, like, I felt like I'm someone who gave a lot of rope to Gajo Dokuro and to Madoka Kakuta in this championship, especially like last fall and into the winter. I was kind of a little bit more of the optimistic thing, but it's not differentiating. So you have someone who should be the 1A or was set up to be the 1A refusing to kind of fulfill that kind of role. And it definitely colors the babyface question and who is the person that feels like that. Because we're almost at a, not fully in the time period case where it's like, okay, we're positioning the cards and the state of play going into Kobe World. But
we're almost there.
There and really, like, with the idea of Golden Coliseum coming, like, it'll be between like a week and like 2 weeks before the traditional Dead or Alive date, that even gives them a little bit more of an operating room. And we've seen them like wait until June to finally kind of arrange the deck chairs with like Benkei in 2024 kind of being the belt pillow in that situation. But there's just no, we're at a point here, and especially with the way that you have a heel being booked in this kind of way, that you're not really positioning people to really become that that coronation road at Kobe World, and you're not really having a situation where you go like, oh, is Shun Skywalker going to finally get one up on Madoka Kakuta? Well, with the way that everything is working, that the answer to that appears to be a big old no, because Kakuta is not in the cage match. Kakuta's probably doing a title defense. So there's a lot of just like looking around at it, and it's like that they, what should be a standard and a good feeling for a Dragon System card, and especially where we are right now, right? Like we're out of the first kind of big weekend of the year, if we want to treat Uno Sos Tres as a analog for the former champion gate. And I think we can hear in this kind of discussion. And usually at this point, we would be looking towards the late spring thing and then what is going to be going into the summer and into King of Gate or into Kobe World. And instead, we're at like this position where I don't know the answer, and I think that's why I look at especially Tanaka over this like set of shows, and I go like, is he actually kind of the answer, and that you like build him up to be the best Brave Gate champion of all time, and then he is finally going to go in and do essentially what Dragon Dai was unable to do in 2024 and win it as a Brave Gate champion? Because he's the only one who feels like has that sort of trajectory at to this point, to me, at the very least.
Okay. I'm going to slow things down here for just a second, because I want to make sure that we're not...
That was kind of a full-on monologue there.
But I want to make sure we're not leaving any stone unturned here. So I want to put a pin in your answer of Shun Skywalker, because I don't agree with that, which I think is why this is an interesting conversation. I want to quickly note that, you know, last year when we were in the Build a Kobe World, there was legitimate conversation around who should win, Shun Skywalker or Yamato. Knowing what we know now, benefit of hindsight, I don't know if Drangate, I don't know when they planned on Ryoya Tanaka winning the belt. Wouldn't it have been an incredible story if Yamato was still Dreamgate champion, had beat Daya for the double title at Final Gate 2024, was champion going into Kobe World 2026, and Tanaka was Brave Gate champion, and then Tanaka beats Yamato for the double belt at World?
Yeah, no, that would have been like the absolute, no, like all of the discussion about who the guy of the future is over. We've spent 2 years basically building this guy to be the one to topple the wall of Yamato. Like, it would have been effortless. Like, it's like patently obvious how easy and good of booking that would have done. And we were sitting here in June and July, and we were still thinking up of future Yamato title defense.
He like had so many left on the table. The thing I'm nervous about with the Tanaka reign, although they're really leaning into the defense count now, so I think they're going to go all the way there. But it's why I get kind of uppity about this Love and Peace Twin Gate reign too with Kame and Rita, because there's no guarantee, especially with the way this company has been booked lately, that Kame and Rita will ever hold the Twin Gate belts again. And so it's like, oh my God, like, let them run with it. Like, burn through a million defenses. What's stopping you? Nothing is bringing people to the buildings now anyways. So why are you, as a company, why are you not embracing all the things you can do with them? Because I go back to the fact that, you know, Shun Skywalker and Diamante, that Shun Monte run, they were one-time Twin Gate champions. They beat Daya and Yoshioka for the title. Mike, do you know the one successful defense? This is a great trivia question. I have a five-star match game over here. So Diamante and Skywalker, they beat Daya and Yoshioka for the belts. And then, do you know their one successful Twin Gate defense before they lost the titles to Kame and Jason Lee? This is a tremendous trivia question. This is five-star match game style.
Okay, so I need to think of who they won the belt from.
So they beat Daya and Yoshioka at Dead or Alive 2022. That was the show where Daya had the Brave Gate defense against Kento, but he lost the Twin Gate belts to Diamante and Skywalker in the opener. And then that was Dead or Alive.
Right, yeah.
They lost the titles to Kame and Jason at World in one of the best Twin Gate matches, one of the best Dragon Gate matches ever. They had one successful defense. It aired on the network. We have seen this match.
Was this the Congo defense on a Abiodun?
No, that was the M3K. That was Mochizuki, Susumu Mochizuki, and Kanda, I believe.
Okay, second guess there, because that one just popped in my head. The answer I was going to go with is it a Noah pairing at the Korakuen leading up to it?
No.
Okay, I have no idea then.
June 13th, 2022, Genki Horiguchi homecoming show, so in Kumamoto, Diamante and Shun Skywalker defeat Shuri Joe and Ultra Soki to retain the Twin Gate belts, the Ryuku Dragon Pro Team. So that's all we got from the Diamante Skywalker run, is Daya and Yoshioka, Shuri Joe and Ultra Soki, and then they lose the titles to Kame and Jason, and they were a no-defense Twin Gate team, because they lost the belts right back to Daya and Kakuta, and they never held the titles again. So we have this thing in modern day Dragon Gate where sometimes we have these great combinations of wrestlers that form a Twin Gate team or a Triangle Gate team, or even singles wrestlers, where it's like, okay, the work that they're doing is working, but these title reigns are so short and sometimes not thought out that we abandon greatness right when we're getting to it. And so the Yamato run, and I don't remember what the exact list was, but when we got to World last year, it's like, well, if they really wanted him to break either the defense record or the days record or both, like, they have the runway to do so seemingly without rematches. And God forbid at some point during your title reign you have a rematch. That feels like something that only Gabe Sapolsky has known in the 21st century. I don't know why nobody else is going back to those. But regardless of all that, I want to go back to this babyface thing. And I actually want to take the time with you on the show in real time to go through in order from Toriumon Japanese Landing January 31st, 1999 to now to figure out the 1A baby faces in company history. And if there's any point in which we're either forgetting something obvious or you disagree with us, please drop a note in the Discord, because I would have normally I would have planned this segment out, but I thought about this right as I was sitting down to record tonight. So I think
throw the rest of the format out. This is I feel like we could take some time with this.
Well, but I mean, I feel like the nice thing is it's like I think there's by and large, there's large chunks of time like that.
Right.
Is the definition of a 1A baby face is there's large chunks of time in which, you know, they are the 1A baby face.
And I think that when we're going to be talking about 27 years, like it's not going to be this huge list, and it might be a couple repeats over the time period too. So like it might end up being just 10 by the end of this, I think.
So I've got to check some dates on Cage Match here, which is going to make this difficult because I feel pretty strongly that our first guy in contention should be Magnum Tokyo.
Yes.
And Magnum, God, when does he...
Are we going to start with the Japanese landing?
Yeah, start with the Japanese landing.
So we're going to go from 131.99. I would probably go into 2000 and maybe...
Oh, absolutely. I'm trying to... I would go into 2001. I'm trying to figure out when he joins Doofixer.
He joins Doofixer... That's 2002 we're talking about. And because it's still M2K when he joins it.
Yeah.
Because Doofixer comes in after Absolutamente 2002.
Okay, so I would say Magnum. I hope this is compelling. So Magnum from 131.99 to, I would say, 930.01, which is that first cage match where he loses his hair. And then I think Shima takes the mantle from there, and Shima, I guess, sort of exists like you were talking about as one of those tweener baby faces. But I feel pretty strongly that by the time
2001,
by the time we end 2001, it's Shima's company more than it's Magnum's company, and that's
right,
a definitive change that happens. I mean, it's a real thing that historically, because Magnum's career played out the way that it did, that he's not going to get the credit for leading the charge, whereas Shima, I mean, you and I have spent countless hours talking about his legacy, and you know, I mean, even very recently talking about his legacy. So I feel like it is, and we're talking about not the ace, not the figurehead, but the 1A babyface, and I think that is Shima up until... What I'm wondering, and this is maybe where you can help me fill in the blanks with some of the Toriumon booking, because it's not coming to mind right now, is I almost feel like it goes back to Magnum at World 2003 when it's Magnum and Shima in the main event.
Yeah, like the issue with that is if we're going to say it's Magnum in 2003, it very quickly becomes Dragon Kid in 2004. Mm. Like it's not, because like Dragon Kid is clearly the top babyface, and like, and like Magnum's like run that we're talking about is essentially his UDG first, the first time that there is a Toriumon created title and not pulling in a UWA or British Commonwealth or any of those with it was the UDG title. It would become the Dreamgate in 2004, and essentially you're talking about 6 months there if we're going to count that there. I do also think that if we have Dragon Kid there, when you get into 2005, that's when he is clearly not the 1A at that point. And then it kind of makes you, it gets difficult in late Toriumon, basically, and into the transition. I would say that in some ways, Shima might still kind of be it other than that 6 month title run, to be quite honest.
That's the strange thing, which is why nothing is really coming to mind after that, is, you know, 2003 Shima is dramatically different than 2001 Shima, so it almost feels like you need a different demarcation point just to mark that historically, because you're almost talking about two different wrestlers at that point. As I go through the Dragon Kid 2004 Toriumon cage match, I feel like it's Dragon Kid until the split. And then okay. it's it, and then I, like I so
then it's Shima until 2005.
So it's a 10-101 through basically 1104 is Shima, and then I'll give Dragon Kid. Dragon Kid gets the mantle from basically that January 2004 Korakuen until the split.
Yeah.
And then this is the strange thing is that
it's almost Rio. It would have been like clearly Rio Saito if the Saito run like was further.
Well, but there's out, but you got to remember Mochizuki because Mochizuki is what the company doesn't have right now. This is basically the point of this exercise is who is 2005 Masaki Mochizuki? Who is the guy that, you know, Saito was incredible. And I think you and I both wish that Rio Saito's career would have been more 2005 Rio Saito than less. And unfortunately, we just live in the reality where it was less. But
yeah, he was the 1B that they were preparing for 2006 to be the 1A.
Yes.
In 2005.
But Mochizuki, you know, give or take a month or two where Shima's the figurehead and he wins the Dreamgate belt against Susumu in September. But like, I feel for all intents and purposes, it is Masaki Mochizuki from the split going forward. And I'm just trying to figure out where Mochizuki would lose that. Because so he loses the Dreamgate belt at the end of 2005. In 2006, it probably goes back to Shima. Up until
he breaks his neck.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I mean. Large blocks here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I figured that it would be mostly Shima up until 2013, to be quite honest, in this kind of discussion.
Well, it's a lot of Shima and Mochi because you can say that it's Shima from 2006 to 2008, and then. So 2009, 2010 is an interesting one because I think it's a very similar point to where the company's
this is
at
them
now.
Trying out a whole lot of the younger guys that would pick it up in 2013.
And I guess, okay, so the heel unit then is Real Hazard. And then kind of Deep Drunkards. So who was Dragon Gate throwing at Real Hazard to say, hey, you know, your bullshit stops now. Is it Doi?
World One. It's World One because Real Hazard forms after the new Hazard heel turn. So World One is essentially immediately kind of slotted in with that. And really, it's Doi from in 2008 to 2010, to be quite honest, given how quickly they get the belt off Shingo in 2008 after he...
Yeah, it's not Shingo. Wolf.
It's not Shingo. And really, it's... And if we were doing Voice Gate in 2010, we'd be talking a lot about in 2009, 2010. I mean, hell, when we did GGUSA and talked about it, we talked about Doi's run at top of the company as Dreamgate champion as the 1A. So like he has to be it at least. I think he has to go Shima to Doi.
And also, I think it speaks to, you know, you mentioned, you know, what the state of the company was right after the Korra scandal. And I always tell people, you know, that maybe started watching Dragon Gate during the pandemic or right after, but Naruki Doi's legacy as a singles wrestler is so wildly different because of his second Dreamgate reign compared to his first. And when you look at the state of the company and how volatile it was, 2008 to 2010, the 1A babyface that they had in Doi was booked like a strong champion, but was not performing like a strong champion, and the company really suffered as a result. So you have January of 99 through roughly September of 2001 as Magnum Tokyo. You have October of 2001 through, we'll say, roughly January 2004 as Shima. January 31st, 2004 through July 4th, 2004, Dragon Kid. Mochizuki takes the mantle there through the end of 2005. I think it's very safe to say it's Shima as the 1A babyface. You know, this is Blood Generation opposing Muscle Outlaws and then Typhoon era Shima 2006 to 2008. You get Doi 2008 to 2010. Masaki Mochizuki makes this easy. Just the calendar year of 2011 is his. The company right now has nobody like 2011 Masaki Mochizuki not even talking about the obvious output and just, one of the great years in the history of the company from an in-ring standpoint, nobody has the aura of justice that Masaaki Mochizuki had in 2011. Again, the guy that's going to stand up to all of these people, I don't know who it is. And Mochizuki having the clear cutoff of just, you know, basically January through December of 2011, we get to 2012, another really odd year for the company. But I guess with the way that Blood Warriors was booked, as I talk this out, it's Shima until he loses the Dreamgate belt, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then this is what we talk about, large swaths of time, because Shima loses the Dreamgate belt July of 2013. Shingo and then Yamato and then Yoshino. And Yoshino becomes Dreamgate champion. And Yoshino is that 1A babyface from October of 2013 until Yamato beat Shingo for the belt at World 2016, I would think.
Yeah. And it really, it drops from Shingo really never had that position as the 1A. The more I kind of like think about it, because then very clearly by 2014, we're talking about until essentially he retires, maybe taking a couple of years for Yamato, you're talking about Masato Yoshino's 1A run.
And it's, you know, this is the complicated part. It's much like Doi, where Doi 2008 to 2010 is booked so strong, even if the performance isn't really what you would want it to be. And that's the thing with 2016 through 2018, 19, 20 Yamato is, it's like, well, that's the guy, but right. He doesn't always perform like the guy.
And I think that you like look at that point. Then they clear the decks essentially by going back to Doi, and that's but and like clearly, like we've talked about it, it seems like that it would have been a December to Kobe World title run, and then it would have gone to Eita at that time, but it was all kind of staging the person in 2021 who would have his year kind of as the 1A and his return from excursion. I feel like then you're going to Shun Skywalker for that year.
So is it, it goes Shima, Yoshino, Yamato. In the same way that we have that little sliver of Dragon Kid, is there an argument to be made that Yamato's time ends with the Benkei babyface push and Road to Kobe World 2019?
Yeah.
In real time, in the moment, it felt like they were building him as the 1A babyface. I think with the benefit of hindsight, we see some flaws that maybe we didn't see there in the moment, which are oddly things that, you know, 7 years later, you know, the charisma element of Benkei is something that he's completely fixed. But I guess if Ben doesn't if it's not Ben interrupting this Yamato run, is it Yamato 2016 to 2021? When Shun comes back and wins the Dreamgate belt, does that feel more biblically accurate to you?
To me, it does. And I feel like when we like look at this, like there's going to be a period afloat, you know, or tail that's allowed for some of these. Because if you want to say that I think much more strongly about that 2004 Dragon Kid thing than really Benkei in 2019 with the sheer power of retrospect. And then 2020 was a clear staging year for 2021. So, I mean, who would, and like the reality of what 2020 was, there was no number one a babyface anywhere. But I feel comfortable saying that for like that 5 year block, and maybe I would say we should consider how much longer Yoshino has it. Because I would say the fact they would go back to Yoshino in 2018 maybe means that it's Yamato starting in like 2019, maybe.
Yeah. Even with
like, but it's difficult. Yeah, you can't discount that Yamato 2016-2017 Dreamgate run. That is a 1A run. It just like the fact they went back to Yoshino that quickly.
So
okay, makes me wonder during the transition is what I'm saying.
Yamato has the belt World 2016 to Dangerous Gate 2017, and then
Mochi
beats him, and then Yoshino beats Mochi, and Yoshino beats Mochi after the split.
Right.
But you know what? And this goes to, like, it just speaks to the issue that Dragon Gate's in, that they've booked themselves into right now, is even though Yoshino wins the Dreamgate belt, at that King of Gate show, right after the split, May of 2018, when they have all the guys in the ring, it's Yamato cutting the "this is Dragon Gate" babyface promo. It's right. Yoshino was there. Yoshino was Yoda at that point in time. But
yeah, that's a good point.
But Yamato was Obi-Wan, and this is a conversation about who the Obi-Wan is. And so it's Yamato 2016 to 2020. It's Shun, much like Mochizuki, Shun just has 2021. That's his. And then 2022 to now is to me the really interesting conversation, because,
well, 2022 I think is pretty easy. 2023 is when it gets hard. I think 2022, like with the power of hindsight, was clearly the year of Yoshioka.
Okay, like, yeah, I almost just want to say decourage, just the concept of Dai and Yoshioka together.
Let's go with that, because it was uniquely different, that it was the pairing as the drawing act, and then they dropped the Twin Gate, as we talked about, Dead or Alive 2022, and that steps us into Yoshioka for the rest of the year, basically.
And then, so this is where my mind fails me, is I can tell people the Dreamgate lineage to, like, almost perfection up until post-pandemic stuff, and then it completely falls apart. And now I have to figure out what the hell Dragon Gate was doing in 2023, because World that year was the cage match, and it was Yoshioka and Kakuta and the Dreamgate.
Yeah, but the Dreamgate goes Yoshioka to Shun to Kakuta, and then ending out the year on Monte.
And it doesn't
2023.
I'm deeply unsatisfied with all of those possibilities. Let me look at what did they do in King of Gate that year? Does that tell us anything? Again, it's amazing. This was 3 years ago. I remember none of it.
23 was Minoru winning for Legits, I thought. And this is just me off the top of my head. I might be completely wrong.
Is that what they did? God, I don't remember.
Oh, no,
that
was KZ time.
No, that was the year before, because that was when it was Shun and KZ and at World.
23 was Minoru. I was
Minoru
right.
versus Shimizu, and I don't remember that at all.
Oh, I remember that, because that was Who Can Stop the Shimizu as a lead up into the Gate of Destiny main event, the
what
one title match, the one title match that they actually built up well during Kakuta's first run.
Yeah, what a fascinating card. August 2023, Shimizu and Kakuta, with Shimizu over in the King of Gate semis. Minoru versus Hyo, with Minoru over in the King of Gate semis. Mochizuki Jr., Susumu Mochizuki, and Yasushi Kanda versus Ishin Kai and Shun Skywalker. Gold Class, Benkei, BB Hulk, Minorita, Naruki Doi versus Daiki Yanagiuchi, Dragon Kid, Punch Tamanaga, Yoshiki Kato. I might want to run that one back. That's a fascinating match with 2026 eyes. Don Fuji, Masaki Mochizuki versus Shuji Kondo, Takashi Yoshida. Daya Yoshioka, Eita Kagatora Yamato versus Kame, Jason, KZ, Strong Machine, J, UT. And then Minoru Shimizu is your King of Gate finals, with Minoru winning. Oh, and this is, okay, this is the King of Gate that had that show in Gifu that we love so much.
Right,
That was Minoru versus Yoshioka in the main event, and Hyo Ishin Kai Shun versus Fuji, Dren Kid, Yamato, and Ichikawa in the semi-main.
Yeah, 2023 maybe did not have a clear-cut babyface 1A, but boy, I'm looking back at this tournament, and I'm going like, yeah, no, Shimizu tears through Skywalker and Quark, and Kanda gets the upset on Strong Machine J, and this is all because Shimizu's pissed that he was left off the Reiwa 6. So he was destroying everyone in the Reiwa 6, and then Minoru was the one that finally kind of grew up and became a real man and won the King of Gate in, like, his fourth attempt in the finals, because Minoru was in the finals basically up starting in 2021. Minoru was in the finals for four straight years.
Yeah, but he never ascended to that level. I'm wondering if 2023 is also decourage.
Yeah,
or just singular Yoshioka, because this is probably a time where we were pretty down on Daya, but it's not. I think they wanted it to be Monte. It wasn't Monte. It wasn't.
I think it was Kakuta.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking it's Kakuta in 23 because he also comes back. He joins D-Courage in the fall of 2022. They win. Him and Yoshioka win Rey de Parejas. He goes into. He goes into Dead or Alive, finishes his story, and then has the title up until the end of the year. I think it has to be Kakuta, even though it wasn't successful.
But I don't feel like he was that kind of guy. I mean, he was fighting to keep his head above water, but I don't really feel
that's not how he felt like in the spring and when he won the belt, though.
Well, he won the belt with perfect booking. I mean, that's the frustrating part of all of this is that they set him up beautifully. He came back on that house show. He said he wasn't going to be a part of Z-Brats because when he got hurt, it was still R.E.D. And then, you know, they had... So that was 2022. So by the end of 2022, he'd had that Twin Gate run. And then start of 2023, Shun beats Yoshioka in January. And you knew when Shun beat Yoshioka, it was like, oh my God, they have a perfect runway to do Shun versus Kakuta. They had the Strong Machine J stopgap defense. And then, I mean, they nailed it. But by World... You know, that was also the weird thing was that part of that year was waiting to see if Monte was going to be that guy, and Monte really wasn't that guy. And I think, you know, Final Gate 2023 is booking malpractice, and other than some of the Kota Minoru stuff in the summer of 2022, some of the worst stuff they've ever done. That three-way match will never sit right with me. It did damage to all three guys involved, but... This is, you know, 2023 was a very strong in-ring year, but it's another year where, okay, we have like a real problem here where we can't come up with a definitive answer. Whereas by the time we get to 2024, we know it's Yamato and it's Yamato for a year. And now we've transitioned out of Yamato again and we don't know who it is. I mean, again, it goes back to if you wake up every day striving to be the best at whatever it is that you do, who in this company is 2011 Masaki Mochizuki right now? And it has nothing to do with their ability as a wrestler. It is the way that they're positioned. Who is the guy in the same way that Mochizuki stood on the front line and said, I am not taking it from Blood Warriors anymore. They don't have anybody positioned in a booking sense to stop Gaja Dokuro. And it's why... The Yoshioka decision to have him lose in Uno Dos Tres is so crazy to me because this conversation wouldn't be happening if Yoshioka won last week.
Yeah, no, and I think then the question would be, okay, we would be looking at to see if there is an immediate kind of jump turnaround. Like, that's what we would be at a point of going, like, trying to see, like, is this the thing that kicks off and gets things back into a place that we've been more accustomed to with Dragon Gate, or if do we continue on this plateau that they've essentially been on, if not slid a little bit over the last 12 months?
It's baffling. I mean, I really don't have an answer. If you go through the roster, I don't feel like... It's funny, like, I really love Vibes right now, and a lot of that is the work that Gyuchi is doing, but...
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel like they have a top line guy. And that's not a dig because I think Strong Machine J is doing really good work right now, but Strong Machine J is not being pushed at the top of the card. You know, that's a unit of mid carders and upper mid carders. If you were going to headline a show with somebody from that unit, I still think it would have to be KZ. I mean, I think he's the biggest star they've got.
And I'd say that we're at a point with KZ that if there was a window, one that I didn't think really was there for him, maybe that they revisit him, but he's not going to be that number one A, you know, like it's just like the window and the chance for that, I think, is way past at this point. So you're kind of, you have to put that unit aside and then you look over and you go like Paradox. That's, you just immediately put that unit to the side and go like, okay, love and peace.
Well, and real quick on the Paradox thing, not to harp on the point that I made last week, but it's so... it's so confusing to me that they're using Paradox the way that they are, where they have a unit of older wrestlers that can still go, and they're just not doing it. Like, we should be getting so much more out of Paradox. That's the odd thing, is like, hey, if you know, post Dreamgate run, if you want to cycle Yamato down for a while, historically that's what they've always done, and I get that and I don't have a problem with it, but that was now almost 9 months ago. I know we just had the Triangle Gate challenge, but like, that was a minuscule sort of stopgap thing. I just don't understand, even if he doesn't, if it's not going to be your 1A anymore, why is he not in your category two baby faces? And why are Susumu and Dragon Kid not doing anything? And, you know, at least, I mean, like, the Kagetora Genki match was fascinating because it seemed like they were getting ready to do something with Kagetora, and they went with the other direction, which was fine. It was interesting at the very least, but it just, that the way that unit is handled is so odd to me. And it really didn't hit me until I went back and watched some of that Team Veteran stuff last month when we were talking about Shima.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, that's right. Like, they could do so much more with what they have, and they're just not doing it.
And I think you also can like look at it as how they kind of view that unit. And it's clearly kind of at a Twin Gate kind of level, given the fact that it seems like that the one real title direction that we have right now is, boy, Paradox is sure getting falls on Kamei right now. And it and really that kind of goes like, are you going to like end the fantasy of Jackie Rita right now? Because you could, because that's how they treat the Twin Gates, is it could be original Jimmies, it could be not hug, you know, with like that kind of thing. But they're just kind of adrift. But like, the clear thing is that if Yamato, which like, I get that you would want to pull back from Yamato after that kind of run a little bit, but I think we're at a point, given how things have gone, that if he's out of the picture at the end of this calendar year, it gets kind of egregious, because he should absolutely be the person that is the like, okay, out of the veteran army, it is Yamato stepping out like the way that like Mochizuki and Shima would do for like those, and even when they would turn it for like Don Fuji at times, you know. But like, as you go down it, like, your real answers in like not hug, if you ask me, are like, okay, when are we going to, is Ben ever going to get an actual true run? And similarly, is it a situation where Hio, the timing is just not right for him at this point? Or is 2026 the year that we like kind of look back at it and Hio at least, he turns 30 this year? Or he turns 30 next year, and that his age is kind of the thing holding him back, even though he's a 10-year veteran in a way.
Well, this is where the difference of a 1A and a 1B really comes into play, because I'm fascinated by the work that Hio's doing right now. I think he's excellent. He's going to be on my 30 under 30 this year, because it's insane to me that he's still under 30 years old as he is, you know, rapidly approaching his 10th anniversary in wrestling, but he is. Hio is not... I think part of it is size. I think part of it is his type of charisma. You know, he's not the type of guy that is going to fix this problem, but Ben K is. And if this promotion is not going to go full steam ahead with Shun as a babyface, because I asked you, you know, a half hour ago, who the 1A babyface was, and you said Shun Skywalker, and I understand why you're saying that, but I disagree with that notion. I don't think I can accept Crazy Max era Shima as a tweener that ultimately at times was your 1A babyface. I can't accept that right now with Saipatra Shun Skywalker. And so it leaves this void at the top of the card, and based on the options that have been presented, I think Tanaka is a fascinating option. I feel like Ben is probably the right option, but also we're not getting a ton of Gaja Dokuro Love and Peace right now. And I think that's a mistake on multiple levels. I think one, I just think when Love and Peace is involved, the floor is raised because all of those guys are so talented, but you know, we're not really getting that, and I think it's a real problem. And so I'm left going through this exercise where I really don't have an answer to my question. And going through things historically only makes this more bleak, because there are so many years, so many great years in company history where it's obvious what the answer is. And I am really struggling to figure out who the top babyface in Dragon Gate right now is, because I can't accept Yoshioka as an answer. And if Yoshioka is the answer, that's a really weak answer. I can't accept Yamato as the answer. I don't feel like Hyo is pushed at a level where he could be the answer. And so I just don't know. I do not know what they're doing, where they have historically what might be the most brooding brute force heel unit they've ever booked. And they have no sign of a babyface that can stop them. And I just don't know what the end game is there.
Yeah, and the ones that you think would be the baby faces end up kind of at a certain point with like the just General Psypatra just being this odd unit historically. It's not providing the best for the heel unit to begin with, you know. But when you look at the last 2 weeks of shows, and really we can go back to the start of February with the three Gacha Dokro fuck finishes in a row on a Corkin. You really, like, when you have like these kinds of setups in this company and you look at it historically, there's always an answer that becomes that you think like, hey, this can be, oh god, look at all these Blood Warrior guys, but look, we have Masaki Mochizuki, we have Masato Yoshino, we have Shingo Takagi. These are the three guys that are able to kind of be the foils. And I almost at this point wonder, like, having Gacha Dokros essentially, with the exception of Kakuta title matches, be swallowed up by Psypatra outside of a week of a really fun Natural Vibes versus Gacha Dokro feud, if it's not just a, okay, we have this grinding heel unit, but when you look at the unit you have put up against them, it never feels like that Psypatra is going to have like that, has had like that kind of conclusion in a way that, I mean, Ryuya Tanaka seems not to have, and D Courage, when they've had the matches with them, have been able to kind of fight them off in a way. And at least it felt like in the lead up to the Yoshioka defense, those preview matches, with it being like more of a D Courage flavor with it, I felt a little better about the heel unit before it got sucked back into more versus Psypatra things.
So, yeah, I mean, Gacha Dokro and Psypatra really bring out the worst in each other, because I think my favorite match from the three shows that happened over the course of the last week, the two Osaka shows and the Korakuen show, I think my favorite match might have been El Cielo and Shun Skywalker versus Kazuma Kimura and Mochizuki Jr., the second match on the second Osaka show. That had life and energy to it that I'm not getting from any of the Psypatra Gacha Dokro stuff. And it reminded me of the fact that, you know, 2 or 3 months ago, we were comparing Cielo and Skywalker to like a modern day Motor City Machine Guns. And then they get swallowed up by this heel unit and you just completely forget that they have the potential that they do. In terms of the Cork and stuff with Gacha Dokro, so they're in the opening match. It's Ishin Kai Kakuta against Monte Mathers and Yoshioka. They are in the semi-main event, which is the Team 2000X versus Psypatra versus Gacha Dokro 9-man 3-way tag match. And then they're in the main event with Tanaka and Jason for the Brave Gate belt. I think the most telling thing of this entire exercise, the entire existence of this heel unit, and especially the way they've really doubled down on heat in the last 2 months, I mean, really since the start of the year when Shimizu came aboard, but it was working better with Vibes than it has been with Psypatra, is that opening match, Ishin Kai Kakuta versus Monte Mathers and Yoshioka. That was a very fun opening match that I thought was progressing really nicely. I thought Ishin was really fun. I thought Monte looked like $1 million. Mathers, credit to him, ended his tour with a bang. I really hope he comes back later this year. I really like watching him in this promotion. When Ishin shoves the referee and does the low blow on Mathers right before the finish, that crowd dies. It is not good heat. It is not bad heat. There is no heat. It is pure apathy in the opening match with that finish. And things only got worse from there as you talk about the finishes to the last two matches. Now, I have mixed opinions on what they did with the Bravegate belt, but in that Bravegate match. But Mike, I don't know if you picked up on it, but I just thought the pure apathy to the finish in the opener told me everything I need to know about this current stretch of heel unit wrestling.
Yeah, and it's such a interesting thing to contrast that with the Gaja Dokoro produce show coming up next Friday that sold out Shinjuku Face twice. So there is a desire to like and have the fans. I mean, you see the towels in the audience. Like, there are huge fans of Kai and Ishin and even some Kakuta towels. But like the finish, then it's like, oh, well, so much for that. And then it does not really continue well when you have that three-way six-man tag. Team 2000X, it was the same pairing from Uno Dos Tres, Masa Kinemita, and Takashi Sugiura, but now they're with Tadasuke. So we get another failed Dragon System guy showing back up versus Saipatra, Shimizu, Kato, Minoru of Gaja Dokoro. And this just is an all-out just brawl over the complete arena. Team 2000X feel completely kind of like standing around and not doing anything. And then all the finishes in this was Ishin cookie sheet misfire on Minoru, eliminating them. And then Kidemiya gets the win after Kato rips, goes after Cielo and then fights to him on the outside. And they get a Oh no, this was he gets in at 20 for that. So it's not even a heel shenanigans thing. It is a count out win, and it just felt pointless with that. And the one bit of good healing throughout the week was setting up Ryotsu Naka versus Jason Lee. Jason was just attacking him nonstop throughout the Osaka shows. Like, he on the first night, he attacked him during the signing, and then like they would fight to the back after the Tanaka match and leading off to this. So everything was actually really built up to a nice little program with it, but you got to a certain point that it just was Tanaka was able to survive all of the bullshit from Gaja Dokoro. He clocks Jason with a chair at the end of it, shoves the chair out of the ring, and then does probably like the most brutal looking series of buzzsaw kicks, followed by the best cross saber cell I have ever seen, and winning with the Stardust Press. So at least there's catharsis that Gaja Dokoro is not taking all the belts and like messing up all the finishes like they did last month in Korakuen. But when you have everyone feel so dead after that opening match, and things kind of get back into it by the main event, like coming out, they go to intermission well, but then when you come back from intermission and it's back to Gaja Dokoro and having a Gaja Dokoro fuck finish going into your main event, it tamps down things. That, I mean, there were like huge Tanaka calls and Roya chants, and especially like at moments in that match, but I wonder how effective those would have been if you didn't already have the auspices of Gaja Dokoro screwing things up and having the heel wrestling that we've been accustomed to lately.
Yeah, just to go back real quick on the Team 2000X, the three-way nine-man, I thought it was telling that that match was pretty much entirely a brawl. I actually have in my notes at one point that there were no what I would deem signature big match Dragon Gate spots up until very late in the match, where you started to get some stuff with Kato and Cielo and then Hamari and Shimizu. But it's very clear that the Noah team was completely out of place and unable to hang in that environment. And before we talk about the Bravegate match, I it's not a rhetorical question when I ask you, what was the point of the Noah involvement whatsoever? They didn't draw a house to this show. They didn't draw a house in Fukuoka. They couldn't hang in the matches they were asked to hang in. the matches were outright bad. I mean, I thought that was the worst thing on the show. It's my lowest star rating. I want to talk about star ratings when we get done with this show, but
yeah.
What purpose did any of that serve?
None. No, I mean, I know you said it was not a rhetorical question, and I immediately say there is no purpose to it, but because, like, at least on paper, if you're saying, like, oh, Team 2000X is going to go help out Shun Skywalker, you would at least go, like, oh, if you bring in Ozawa, that will pop a number. You don't send Ozawa over, and it falls flat. At least if Ozawa showed up, we can go, like, well, we hate it. We think it's bad, but at least some tickets were sold for it. But no. Not whatsoever. This served no purpose, and all it did was just muddle up shows, essentially, for the last three weeks.
It's unequivocally, and I will stand 10 toes down on this, the worst bit of Dragon Gate NOAH partnership ever. Paris Del Mal.
I long for Paris Del Mal to hit upon.
Paris Del Mal was flawed, but let me tell you, and I will always go back to it, there is that June Triangle Gate match that's like Strong Machine, Jay Casey, and UT. I think those were the Natural Vibes guys. Against Nozawa, Kotaro Suzuki, Eita. And it is, without question, the best match of Nozawa's career. And it made a lot of that headache worth it because we got that 4.25 star Triangle Gate match where Nozawa
was like doing Yave with UT. It was fantastic.
And then ripping Strong Machine J's mask in a really compelling way. Like, just that whole thing was not, I would not like to relive any of that.
No, we don't need to relive.
That happened. It was great.
Case, we do not need to relive Ultimo 35 ever again.
No, again, no. Tough. Not the best partnership they've ever done, but officially not the worst.
But we can also say that we don't have to worry about the auspices of an Ultimo retirement match. He says he's doing it in Mexico, so we don't have to deal with that again.
Yeah, that's God. So funny.
The best part of that Latin Lover interview was him going like, oh yeah, no, I'm retiring in Mexico. I'm doing like the Japanese stuff out of obligation, essentially.
Basically, yeah. So... I don't know. I'm completely baffled by this NOAH stuff because it doesn't really seem like it's leading anywhere, and it continues to give me 1 second here as I clear my throat. I apologize. You don't need to cut this. I'm going to mute and come right back. It continues to take us away from the really compelling Gajah Dokuro versus Vibe stuff, and it just continues to muddy the water. I mean, I've complained in the past, you know, the first Osaka show was headlined by a tug of war best of three series between those two units. And I feel like the last time they did this was RED and Masquerade in the fall of 2021. And that was 5-on-5 because I believe I got to pull that card up real quick because that was Jason Lee and Eita. And they had such an awesome singles match. And I think they also had Estrella and Monte kind of kick that series off. That was, I think, October of 2021. Let me pull that up real quick, because I feel like that's the last time they had done that gimmick, and it really worked. I mean, I have a pretty vivid memory of it in my mind because it was just such an enjoyable way of spending time with those two units that at the time, I mean, we've talked about this at length about how, you know, there's not really a signature Masquerade versus RED match, but there's so many great Masquerade versus RED matches throughout history, and they just never really had that one that you could point to as like the really defining, like, hey, this is the best in the series. Why am I not finding this on Cage Match? Eita and Jason Lee in a singles match definitely happened. Because I feel like Jason pinned Eita. I remember this.
Yeah, because I remember that feud with those two.
God, this is going to drive me nuts. I don't see this. It couldn't have been 2022 because Shun was already a heel by that point. It was in Korakuen, and it was... Oh, okay. A cage match has it listed weird. So this was they've got it listed as a gauntlet match. So it was Shun and Dia Inferno, Kento and Estrella, Diamante and Dia, Minoru and Ishida, and Jason and Eita. And I feel like that's the last time they did that style of match. And they got so much out of it. And this time around, it's Kakuta and Skywalker and Cielo and Shimizu and Homare and Minoru. Cielo versus Shimizu ends with a DQ, which is just such a cheap way of going about business here. And I mean, my takeaway from this was like, hey, Homare and Minoru work really well together. And that was probably my favorite Minoru singles match in 2 or 3 years, which was not the purpose of that match.
Right, yeah, and like also just discussing the conundrum with Gachidoka and Saipatra, the next day, Hamari had a very good singles match with Aki opening up that show. So it's not like a Hamari thing with this, because because like I loved like the way that they like worked the super kick into kind of the finish, and then the golden rose into the Momo latch. Like that felt like how you finish off these matches. Like that's kind of like the frustrating sort of thing that you have with some of these situations, is like you get two fuck finishes, and then you get the last finish is actually like perfect, like Dragon Gate wrestling. You know, like that's exactly what should happen in like a three match series, getting a finish that way. But the lead up to it, the on a show that only had like, I think everything else was under 8 minutes on the show, this was the only thing that really got time other than Kimura getting to team with Love and Peace. Kazuma Kimura had himself a hell of a week. We should
fantastic. Like,
we should take some time when we get to it. Kazuma Kimura is exactly who we thought he was last year, and it's great to see that back. But going back to the three match series, it just felt like you've completely you're pissing on everyone's time, that we're waiting around to just get that little bit of greatness at the last point after two fuck finishes in a three match series.
It's bizarre. I mean, you know, I felt like these shows really did not accomplish much other than, you know, you get another Tanaka defense in the books and you get the seeds being planted for some sort of Ishin Minora tension, which as you go into the cage match, I think is one of the many things that Dragon Gate does well, is, you know, you would think at some point you're going to have Ishin on top of the cage and Coach Minora is going to be right there, and they're going to have to figure out if they're going to team together going forward or if they're going to turn on Ishin. I think that's a really interesting angle that I look forward to seeing being developed. But otherwise, I mean, do you think it's odd that you have Golden Coliseum at the end of April, so you're going to have one Korakuen show before then? And as I pull up the schedule here real quick, you know, you're going to have the Gaja Dokuro show next week. Other than that, they only have TV in Kobe at the end of the month. And then come April, it's a Korakuen show at the beginning of the month, a Fukuoka doubleheader, another Kobe show, and then they get to Golden Coliseum. There's not a ton of TV left. Do you not think it was bizarre that they didn't set up Kakuta's next challenger in Korakuen?
Yeah, like when you look at what the state of play is, I think that like you're not going to do a Dragon Kid one because they're going to do Dragon Kid versus or at least I don't assume they're going to do Dragon Kid one, because I feel like Dragon Kid versus Tanaka is pretty much like the way you have to go with the
Dragon Kid versus Tanaka would be the betting odds favorite. I would love to see Kakuta wrestle a non-heavyweight because that is how he does his best work. I think Kakuta versus Dragon Kid would be an awesome Golden Coliseum Dreamgate match, but I would say it's a much safer bet, a much safer prediction that Dragon Kid will be with Tanaka on that show.
Right. So like you look around at the state of play and it's just like, is someone going to do something like you're going to have to look at the April 6th main event or whatever Kakuta is booked against, because we don't have that. Like after a time period where we knew what was going to happen going into like the next Korakuen, and I feel like that's been the case for the last 9 months, really, that there's always kind of been a sense of like, okay, we at least have, you know, we had the All Asia tag match announced back in January. Like after that match, it was like, okay, this is going to be the one that's happening here at this point. We don't have that in April. So the only way to like to divine the tea leaves is just seeing who Kakuta is paired off against. And if it's anyone like Ben, who is a rational title defense, but like we're at a point also.
But they already did Ben. Like that's what I don't understand about the fucking Kakuta reign, is where are they going? Like I don't know what else there is to do.
Strong Machine J? I don't feel like Strong Machine J.
But he's Triangle Gate champion.
No, he's not.
Oh, no, he's not. That's KZ. But still, that's like, I mean, I don't know, man. I like Strong Machine J. Yeah, he just got tapped out. Like, what are we doing? And I like Strong Machine J.
I feel like that interview with Kanye where it's like, I like Gaga. What the fuck does she know about cameras? But I like Strong Machine J. But, you know, he's... When they did Strong Machine J versus Yamato, that was a defense, right?
Yeah, that was in Yokohama.
Thank you. I was thinking it was... I was like, it wasn't Gate of Destiny. When did they do that? No, it was Yoga. And like that felt like a big deal. They had pushed Strong Machine J really hard. It felt monumental that he was headlining a big show and not like Osaka number two, because we had seen that before. And if it was Strong Machine J versus Kakuta and Osaka number two, fine. I wouldn't bat an eye at it. But this is a big building. And with all due respect to El Cielo, not like he's a fucking household name. Kato's unproven in main events. Shimizu, for as much as it breaks my heart, is not exactly Stone Cold Steve Austin in 1999 at the box office. So even though you have the cage match, I don't feel like the way it's been built to right now, I don't feel like that's a strong enough cage match to where you can do the modern day equivalent of BB Hulk versus Cyber Kong for the Dreamgate belt. Like, you need something else on this show. But with Kakuta, they've already done Ben. There's no signs of life in Paradox. I mean, look, I mean, I'd jump for joy if it was Daruki Doi, but they just don't seem interested in doing that sort of thing with Doi at this point.
Well, he's a freelancer, and I mean,
but
he wasn't
still
even
on your shows. You can.
He wasn't
beat
on
him.
Golden
he's
Coliseum.
Yeah, he wasn't. No. Trace, you're right, but he's on most big shows. I mean, he's around. He's in the Rey de Parejas finals when they wanted to be. Like, you can push him. It's almost like that. They've got the thing with Doi that the U.S. Indies had for a while where all of those guys were getting signed. And when they would, like, no company would take advantage of somebody leaving by putting over the next guy. Like, with Doi, it's like, well, if we push him, you know, if we beat him, he might leave. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. Like, beating Naruki Doi is a big deal. Have somebody beat Naruki Doi. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and, like, it's also something that hasn't really come up. Like, when's Rey de Parejas? Too. Like,
I know.
Like, you have all these
I'm
things.
I'm baffled by that.
Yeah. There seems to be like a lack of focus at a monumental level. And I thought I got my dark cloud out of me last hour, but it's just like you're able to pull off a 1 week build with Jason. And I know it's like Jason attacked him at Uno Dos Tres, so it's really 2 weeks, but you have. You send two shows where you don't have them wrestle, but you have them like do things on each show to build to this kind of match. Why is that absolutely absent of any way that you choose to build, or you choose to build by knocking out the challenger? And it's with, oh, can they take another shot? And the spoiler alert is no, they have not been able to take another shot from Kakuta. It's such questionable booking at a time where they. I feel like this roster top to bottom is as complete with as the least amount of dead weight as it's been in years. It's befuddling.
It's not a bad roster. I want to get to that point here in just a second to compare it to 2018, but I don't know what they're going to do. As for the Bravegate match, a rare glimmer of positivity on this show, because one of the points I've made all along with the Tanaka reign is that ever since the heel unit became Gaja Dokuro, which sort of coincides with the length of his Bravegate run, you know, it's all heavyweights. It's Kakuta, Shimizu, Minoru, Kai, Ishin, Kato. Those are guys that can't challenge for the Bravegate belt. And Jason, Big Papa Pump, had largely existed as a heavyweight. And it looks like Jason had slimmed down a little bit, at least for preparation for this match. And so,
yeah,
I will say, you know, this is the only time we're going to get Tanaka in this environment for the Bravegate belt with all this heel interference. I thought it mostly worked. I thought they probably did one too many heel interference spots. I think by the time that Tanaka threw down the chair and just kicked Jason in the face instead, I was like, all right, I think I'm done with this. But it is another telling sign where, like, you know, the first Gaja Dokuro interference spot in this match is, you know, Tanaka lands that step up crossbody. And then he goes for a move in the corner, but Jason throws the referee in front of Tanaka. Tanaka crashes into the referee. Ishin comes in and starts beating down Tanaka and gets nothing, gets no reaction. It's that opening match apathy now in the main event. Yoshioka clears house from there. You go back to an even match, which is set up after Tanaka does the sort of walk the plank swanton bomb off the
off the post, onto everybody. Great spot. Mathers was out there. Yoshioka was out there. All the Helion was out there. Really good stuff. From there, you get just sublime wrestling with Tanaka and Jason. The Crimson Smash counter where Jason leaps
so
into
good.
The air, into the choke sleeper. That was incredible.
The whole
that was so great.
Was incredible. The way that, you know, Roya fought out of it, mm-hmm. and then he applies it a second time, but he does it with such force that Roya is able to go around and then do the, I don't know what he calls the handspring kick, but it felt like that was like the most devastating versions of Tanaka's offense was on display against Jason, because every single like big spot for Tanaka, it was the best cross saber in the closing stretch he's ever hit. That kick was like timed well. Just everything that I feel like you want out of a 1A babyface eventually is there in Rio Tanaka.
Yeah. So, you know, as the match goes along, you get a great sequence, cross saber counter, maximum driver counter, rewind kick, but Tanaka shakes that off, hits a buzzsaw kick. They both go down. This is where the second heel interference spot happens. This is Kai hitting a box attack on Tanaka. He goes straight to the back, and then Jason goes right into the maximum driver, and he gets a big 2.9 kick out on that. And that spot, that kick out got a huge reaction. And that is where, again, because Tanaka hasn't really had this style of match in his reign, I was very on board and very into it at this point. But I felt like that was the last bit of it that they needed. And then they need to go back to what Tanaka's been doing, that classic Bravegate style of action that they were nailing. But they can't help themselves right now. And they had to do one more spot, and the chair gets in the ring, and then Tanaka throws down the chair, which I always have mixed feelings on, because I understand it's like the noble thing to do, but I also think it makes you look like an idiot if you have a chair and you don't use it. And then,
and especially in a promotion where basically the only way you get DQ'd is by mask ripping or doing something mm-hmm. directly in front of a referee. You know, like I actually at that point I was going like, okay, this is when Yoshioka and Mather should hop in the ring and clear out the ring and have it be completely even at that point.
Yeah.
And I was a little disappointed at that, because they did that in the Yoshioka drink bait shot. And I thought that was like one of the most like interesting things about the match, and also puts the whole Saipatra thing all in stark relief. The fact that D-Courage was able to take out all seven of them for that match. Like, it felt like that should be happening here in Corkin as well. And it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And so by the time the chair, I mean, if I ran a wrestling promotion, I would just never have a babyface ever have the spot where he has to decide whether or not he has to hit somebody with a chair, because I feel like it's a lose-lose every single time. I don't think
case we would fine them not for doing the chair shot.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It's just a lose-lose. He looks either really weak or he hits somebody with a chair. I would never put somebody in that spot. And then from there, you know, cross saber, Stardust Press. He nails the Stardust Press. I went 3 3/4 on it. I was at the same rating, oddly enough, for Kimura and Junior versus Cielo and Skywalker. And I think that I like that match just a tad more. Somebody asked me in the DMs this week, and I did not get back to them, but I know they listened. So I'm just going to answer their question here. If that was the best Jason singles match in Dragon Gate history, I think they liked it just slightly more than I did, because, again, I was at 3 3/4. The notebook matches I have for Jason Lee singles matches historically are Jason versus Ishida 12/15/2019, KZ versus Jason Lee from 5/21/21, and I think that would be his best singles match ever. Ben K versus Jason Lee from 5/21/22, Shun Skywalker versus Jason Lee from 3/3/22, Hyo versus Jason Lee from 10/15/22, Jason Lee versus Minorita 3/4/23, Dragon Daya versus Jason Lee 5/5/23, and Jason Lee versus Yamato 5/5/25. So this is in the upper echelon of Jason Lee singles matches, but I would not have it as my top pick.
Yeah, I remember that Ishida one just being insane.
The Ishida match was awesome. The KZ match was on the Hokkaido tour. That was a King of Gate match, and that was That was Masquerade Jason versus Peak Natural Vibes KZ. That match is, I went 4.5 on that. That is it's so good.
I was a step up. I was 4 flat on this.
I was trending that direction. That chair spot just took me out of it.
Yeah, no, entirely understand. It's the only 4 I had on the entire weekend of shows with it. It's something where, like, I now that we've had this kind of, okay, now Gajah Joker does this, like, okay, we've checked this off the list. We don't need to revisit this unless it's like Kamei turning heel and it's Kamei is like heel Jackie or something like that down the line. And if and for that to happen, we're probably talking a post Defense 12 world for that kind of thing.
I was thinking about the show after I finished watching it all the way through because just, and this might change as I type up my written review this week, and I could bump a few matches up a quarter star. I could bump a few matches down a quarter star with the way I'm feeling, who knows, but I went 3 stars, 3 stars, 3.25, 3.5, 3.25 for the All Asia tag. And I want to talk about that match here in just a second, 2.5 and then 3.75. And Mike, I mean, that is a pretty bleak.
Yeah.
Dragon Gate Cork and Hall show.
Just that, for comparison.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, just because mine aren't much better than yours. I was 3.25 for the opener, 3 flat, 3.5, 3.5, 2.75 for All Asia. I thought that did not need to go 13 minutes. And then 2.5 for the three way and then 4 flat. So I'm with you just like a shade higher, but I can't think of a time, like if it wasn't for that Brave Gate match, this might have been the worst Dragon Gate production show in a year and a half, if not longer.
So I started thinking about if it was the worst Corkin that I had seen, and I immediately had to go back to 2018, and it's why, like, although again, my antenna's up on the conversation, and I'm certainly not happy with the product that I'm watching right now. Dragon Gate in 2018 almost got me to stop covering the promotion, and I'm nowhere near that point right now. So I started looking at the Corkins that year. The January 16th opened the New Year Gate Corkin show. I went 2.25, 2.5, 2, a non-rating on Shingo Takagi versus Punch Tamanaga, a non-rating on Yosuke Santamaria, Ryosuke Santamaria, and Hyosuke Santamaria versus Shima Gamma and Don Fuji, which was a Dino-esque sort of match.
I remember as soon as you said who the three were against them, I remember this match exactly. Yeah, no, that was
a tough one.
Rough.
I did go 4.25 on the Desmond Xavier, Zachary Wentz versus Flamita Bandito match that changed the trajectory of Wentz, Xavier, and Bandito's life. And then the main event, or no, I'm sorry, I went, there's a lot of matches on this show, 3.25 on the semi-main event and 3.75 on the main event. So I feel like that show is better than the one we just watched. Now, I went through the Voices of Wrestling archives and I went very deep. Like I said, I've been reviewing Dragon Gate shows since July of 2015. I have done over 200 show reviews. Most of them are Dragon Gate Corkin shows. There have been a few times in my life where I've had jobs or whatever where I've needed people to pinch hit, but I always try to make sure that these Corkin reviews get covered. It's really important to me that we have the historical documents.
And I would say in your pinch hitting, and because I'm usually the one tapped
in. You've become
the
default guy, yeah.
Yeah. The breadth of this, like, essentially is that maybe 2 or 3 shows per year over this time period that we're talking about. So it's I would say that it's not a disqualifying amount that is in there. I think it's a fair, that your breadth here is expansive enough.
So
just for clarification.
The reason I mentioned that is, like, I did not write a review for the final December Cork in this past year because it wasn't going to happen. I didn't have the time. I barely had time to talk about it here. The last Cork in that I can find that we did not review, you or I, is unfortunate because I think it might be the weakest Cork in company history. We do not have a review for the April 2018 Cork and Hall show, but I will read you this card. So April 6, 2018, this is Gate of Passion. I believe up until this past December, this is the last one that you or I did not review. And it's a shame because this is, to me, in contention for maybe the weakest Cork and Hall show ever. I'll just read this card. Opening match, Hyo Watanabe, Oji Shiba, Shun Skywalker, Yuki Yoshioka versus Gamma, Kaito Ishida, Problem Dragon, Kness. Don Fuji and Sachihoko Boy versus Naruki Doi and Starkery Chikawa, which I will note went 10 minutes. Takashi Yoshida defeats Benkei. BB Hulk, UT, and Yosuke Santamaria versus Big R Shimizu, Jason Lee, and Masato Yoshino. As somebody that watched Dragon Gate in 2018,
That match was probably incredible, and it's the only thing on that show that would have been worth watching. Is those Maximum Trios matches were a lifesaver at this point. Last three matches on the show, three-way match. Yamato defeats Masaki Mochizuki and Ryo Saito. Semi-main event, Brave Gate Tournament Final, and I have zero recollection of this. Dragon Kid defeats Kagetora. Main event, 10-man tag, Oda Rules Elimination Match. Genki Horiguchi, KZ, Punch Tominaga, Susumu Yokosuka, and Brother Yashi defeat Eita, L. Lindemann, Shingo Takagi, T-Hawk, Yasushi Kanda. I don't have anything in my spreadsheet listed as a notebook match from this show, and that card outside of that Tri-Vanguard Maximum match looks bad.
Yeah, I went through my notes, and I don't have my notes for this show. I skipped it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And Maximum really was like the only thing of that time period. This was
at a point in time where,
yeah,
I mean, you and I were not doing audio weekly at this point. I mean, you were doing a lot of monthly podcasts, and I would hop on for like World, but I just wasn't doing a lot of audio at that point. But you and I would always DM.
Oh, I know why I don't have the show. That would have been over Mania New Orleans week.
Would have been over Mania. You're right. That would you were getting international breaking news that Shima was getting ready to leave the promotion before anybody else. So that's why you don't have notes for this. And I did not review it. I don't know what I was doing, but I do not have a review for that. But you and I would DM whenever there's a Kobe show or a Fukuoka show or even like an Osaka show around this time. And if the Maximum match, whatever the Maximum match was on the show, wasn't good, we were fucked because the rest of the show was going to be awful at that point. And that's why I still, like, this company has a lot of things wrong with it right now, but the existence of Love and Peace and some of the vibe stuff that's going on and some of the D-Curve stuff, there was nothing in 2018 Dragon Gate as entertaining as what Ryoya Tanaka is doing right now. Like, it's on another planet. So it's not, Dragon Gate's not the worst it's ever been. It's also only been a month, and 2018 was a very long year, quite honestly.
Yeah, and as one of the main actors is forcing people like me to relive 2018 in a at about $4 exchange rate per time. Yeah, I think that that's worth, that is a good thing to kind of put this kind of into context a bit more. Let's touch on the All Asia match. Mochi Fuji make their first successful defense against Strong Machine J and Tatsumi Fujinami after Strong Machine J was in a shoulder lock that Fujinami throws the towel in. So Mochizuki catches him in the bum shoulder. Fujinami ends it after 13 minutes. And I really enjoyed this match for like the first like 8 minutes of it. And then I kind of got to a point where I was getting a little sad about Fujinami.
Okay, so unabashed,
I thought he looked very good for the first half of it.
He looked very good up until he did the Scorpion Deathlock.
Right, yeah, and that's where I was like, oh, we need to go home.
That is when things fell apart, and he never really recovered after that, because I say this as an unabashed Fujinami mark. He's one of my favorite wrestlers ever. Anybody that's listened to my Greatest Wrestler Ever audio knows. I think Fujinami is one of the five greatest wrestlers ever. I think, unfortunately, part of it is the New Japan copyright issues. Part of it is that 80s New Japan is just not circulated in the same way that 90s All Japan or 90s New Japan Juniors or Michinoku Pro. Like, we just don't have reverence for 80s New Japan, and that's where Fujinami was at his peak. He's one of the greatest wrestlers ever. I was admittedly very excited to see him on the show, and I was thinking
Did you get excited the fact that they didn't cut his theme until he actually got into the ring? Were you
very
bopping?
Funny? Yes, I was into it.
I've reached a point where like I listen to like that kind of music just as background noise, and mm-hmm. The fact that I was like, wait, is this not a YouTube channel I probably should not be using? No. This is actually being played on screen right now. It brought a smile to my mouth at least.
Yeah. So I was thinking for the first half of this match, I was like, man, this is like the best Fujinami performance since whatever Dragon Gate Shingo homecoming show he did in like 2016 or 17, maybe.
Yeah, the Yamanashi show that had pyro.
Yeah. You know, I forget which year that he popped up there, but there was a point in time where Shingo would always have a really great guest for his homecoming show. And I remember whatever footage we saw, it might have even been on like a Gaiora bumper that we saw the Fujinami match.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was like a weird, you know, but we saw the match. And I was like, God, this like Fujinami's like kind of working his ass off in this match. And then he almost fell over on the Scorpion Deathlock, which I still feel like it worked because it wasn't the finish. It was like, okay, well, he can barely stand up. And so, of course, Mochizuki can escape. But it just, the match never fully, it never fully got there after that. He started getting a little sloppy. He started looking old at that point. He started showing his age, and it was a bummer. I mean, I still went 3.25 on this match, but I was really, really into this, like, above average Fujinami performance we were getting momentarily.
And I have to say, Don Fuji did like one of the most old school headlock takeovers in the opening moments. And I was like, all right, Fuji's geared up for this, because he decided to bounce off the ropes like he was watching one of those French Lutte videos. And Jay, I felt like Jay, he is so good in his role in a lot of different places. But like the added context about Fujinami doxing Super Strong Machine and talking about like that aspect of like the 80s into this, I thought like that added a level of flourish that, at least for like having someone who is still, you know, wrestling, I mean, in his 70s, but like that level of a like legendary star, I felt like that added a level to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was fun while it lasted. I wish Fujinami would have been able to hang on a little bit longer.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. The one undercard match that I wanted to spend some time on before we got out of here, Case. We've kind of mentioned it in oblique terms. You discussed his performance against Shun and CLO, teaming with Junior. He had the semi main event in the first night of Osaka, but Kazuma Kimura, essentially 6 months into his career, received his first win, and I think he was as surprised about the win in the ring as Jiro Shimbashi was at just losing the Aware Gate again over the weekend. It was Jiro Shimbashi versus Kazuma Kimura, second match on the show, and we got serious Shimbashi, and I really kind of adored it. There was a great Shimbashi Cabradora fake out where he did that to just do just kind of a spaceman press into it, and Kimura just lighting him up and then getting to the point where he goes for the cross arm breaker, and Shimbashi taps so fast that Kimura is kind of stunned both that he tapped that fast and also that he won. I am glad to see Kimura getting that step right here, and now at least if this week is indication, like they've moved on from Gyuchi and Aki and their rookie roles, and now it is Kimura's time to kind of shine right now. And that was nice to see this week.
I really like the Shimbashi like 180 plank dive that he did off the apron.
Yeah, the Cabrata fake out, because he was going to go for the Cabrata and he did like that spaceman chest dive.
Yeah, a very funny looking move that seemed to be pretty effective. I thought this was awesome. I mean, I really enjoyed the change of pace here for Shimbashi. It came at a time where I think that character needed it, and Kimura continues to look awesome. So if you're going to check out stuff on this show, it's Jiro Shimbashi versus Kazuma Kimura and the main event of Jason Lee versus Ryo Tanaka. And I think otherwise, I think you're set. I think you're good.
Yeah, I mean, elsewhere on it, the weirdness with Paradox and Love and Peace in that 10-man, that they get another win, but there's no twin challenge coming from either side. Natural Vibes had a just pretty solid weekend. I would say that my trepidation with Aki has gone down by the week, and I think that he had a very kind of strong week, and we touched on a little bit. It was kind of at least for us, a little bit of a bummer that this is it for Mathers in Japan this time. I thought he had a pretty strong last week, and Yoshioka has declared that he is a full D-Courage member. So I hope that the Vegas announcers will announce him as D-Courage members, even on WWID show.
We can only hope. I thought Mathers was great. I really enjoyed him on this tour.
Yeah, no, and I did see that they're doing a tryout before Mania Week in San Jose that PWR is throwing. That I saw Dragon Kid do like the video clip from it. So it's nice to see. Like, if we're talking about Dragon Gate now versus 12 months ago, it feels like that the foreign window is now fully reopened, and that it maybe coming out of Mania, we could see other new faces potentially out of it. But if it's just Mathers and Hermanos de Julia coming back, I would not be let down either.
Very much so. And I think that's all I've got this week, Mike.
Yep, I hear you. Case, right as we were finishing up, F1 is underway for the year. So the time zone, it's in Australia to start off. So we're actually starting on a Thursday night. So I'm going to get to that and get this to Joe and Rich. But Case, but the next time we're in everyone's feeds, we're going to finish out 1995 in Michinoku Pro, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I'm quite excited for it.
Yep, we will be back next week with episode 12 of Those Days. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. You can step inside the Voices of Wrestling Discord. The Open the Voice Gate channel is where we do our show updates. A lot of discussion lately going on with Osaka Pro. I will catch up with Osaka Pro by the next time we have a Voice Gate show. I have it on my list for that. But as well, there is the Dragon Gate channel as well. That's on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Case is on Twitter at _InYourCase. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week with Those Days. Take care, everyone.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to Noah, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Mari Gold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.